Welcome to my podcast, where I share true stories of survival, overcoming obstacles, and failure. These stories will inspire and motivate you, as well as provide you valuable wisdom and lessons learned to help you face the challenges of life, and most importantly, keep you in the fight. Episode 52, the story of Ross Capocone. Now, there's a lot of lessons learned here, and it's a pretty amazing story, so let's get right into it. So Ross was 17, way back in 2007, and he was a normal high school kid. Entering his junior year, he did what normal teenagers do, cruise around with his friends. He was a skateboarder, probably stayed out a little bit too late, probably caused a little bit of trouble, but for the most part, he was a good kid and had a lot of good friends. Now, Ross lived in a small town outside of Detroit, Michigan. And I've never been to Detroit, Michigan. But what I do know is there's some sketchy parts of Detroit. And in particular, as I did some research for the story, there's an east and west side of Detroit. And you don't just go over to the east side of Detroit, from what I could tell. And there's this particular street called 7 Mile. And it has a murder rate like 7 times that of New York. The numbers are just off the charts as far as crime, drugs. Police don't even supposedly go down to this 7 Mile street that separates a part of the town. And I don't remember if it's 7 miles long or not, but it's probably a pretty long street. On the map that I was looking at, it's a long street. And there's, if you zoom in to the pictures on Google Earth, which I did, where you get like a street view, it's kind of like a third world country. It is rugged, just abandoned neighborhoods. You wouldn't want to be driving down there in daylight, let alone at night. And so point of bringing that up is Ross had a friend that he'd known for a long time, and his friend had asked him to give him a ride to his cousin's house. And Ross asked his friend, "So where's your cousin live? West or east side?" And his friend said, "Oh, it's on the east side, over by 7 Mile Road." And he's like, no, man, I'm not going over there. I'm not giving you a ride." His friend said, "Oh, come on, man, please, I'll give you gas money, whatever it takes." And Ross kept saying no. About a week later, his friend came up to him again. "Hey, do you mind giving me a ride to my cousin's house on the east side? I'll pay for your gas." And at that point, Ross was thinking, you know, I've known this kid for a while. Hey, if we go in the daylight, I can go drop him off. Not a big deal. I don't really feel comfortable about going over there. But what the heck? He's going to pay for my gas. And so he says okay to his friend. I keep saying Ross's friend throughout the story because his name has been redacted. And I can't find his name. So that's why he's referred to as his friend. Anyway, so Ross says, okay. I'll take you over there. Let's go by and get some gas first. And so they plan the day that they're going to go. Ross picks up his friend in his car, takes him over to the gas station, gives him $30 for gas. And all the while, Ross is like, man, I don't know about this. I probably shouldn't be going over in that area on the east side in Detroit, especially near 7 Mile Road. Just sketchy part of it. But hey, it's daylight out. And I'll just do this, get it done. He's been asking me now for quite a while. And all right, it's going to happen. So they get on their way. They head over to in the direction of where his cousin's house is. His friend is giving him directions. Okay, turn here, turn left here. They get to kind of the sketchy part of town. But it's midday. He's not too worried about it. And finally, they come down one of the roads, and he says, "Hey, all right, yeah, there's my cousin's house. We just turn over in the back area, And there's a small kind of alleyway that goes back behind houses. And so it's kind of like a one way, but where he can pull in, and then the house is right behind the alleyway there. So he pulls in, and Ross did feel a little bit kind of red flags going off. Like, yeah, I don't really want to pull in to this alleyway and then behind the house, but hey, we've come this far. I've known this kid for a while. Not a big deal. Pulls into the alleyway, parks the car, and he gets out of the car. And his friend gets out of the car. And that's when he heard it. He heard a gunshot. And he looked down at his arm, and it was just hanging there. Kind of a little bit of bone and flesh, blood streaming down his arm. And he couldn't believe what he saw at first, because he couldn't believe that somehow a gunshot had hit him. And where could it have come from? He looks up from his arm over to his friend and says, "Did you just shoot me?" Looking at his friend, who's holding a sawed-off shotgun. And at that very moment, his friend pulled the trigger again and blew a 4-inch wide hole in the side of Ross's chest. Ross falls to the ground, and he's not killed instantly somehow, but he's on his hands and knees, and he's in just disbelief that his friend he's known for over 10 years has shot him twice now, once in the arm and now in the chest. He's not unconscious, but he's sitting there thinking, what is happening? What is going on? His ears are ringing from the gunshot. Blood is streaming down his arm. His chest is pooling up in front of him. And he says, "I'm going to die." He knows he's about to die. As he's on his hands and knees there for what must seem like minutes, but was only seconds, his friend walks around the front of the car to the driver's side where Ross is, on his hands and knees, and lifts the shotgun up to Ross's head. Ross feels the metal barrel of the end of the shotgun graze across the hair on the top of his head and thinks, this is it. He's going to shoot me in the head. It's over. And in a split second, Ross reacts with his other arm and knocks the gun up just as it's fired and shoots him in the head again, but it doesn't shoot him directly in the head. It knocks him back onto his butt, where he's kind of like sitting down. And Ross thinks, "Wow, I just got shot in the arm, in the chest, and now I just got shot in the head." He doesn't know the extent of his injuries on his head. There's blood streaming down his head. And he looks up at his friend, still in complete disbelief that he's been now shot 3 times. His friend looks at him, pulls back the gun, faces the butt end of the gun towards Ross's face, and then knocks out his teeth. Ross's head flies back. He falls onto his back, onto the asphalt, right by his driver's side door, his car, and is looking up at the sky, still amazingly conscious and just in total pain and agony of what just happens. Then he hears his vehicle getting started and his vehicle screech out of the alleyway, and his friend drives off in his car. And as Ross is laying there, he kind of gives up a little bit. He says, "Well, this is it. I've been shot in the arm. Blood's everywhere. I've been shot in the chest. I must be dying. I've been shot in the head." And at that moment, Ross feels something push him. He He doesn't know if it was just his internal instinct to just keep fighting and not give up, or something else kind of lifting him up. But he rolled over onto his belly in the big pool of blood that he was in, and he felt something kind of come underneath both of his arms and lift him up to his knees. He doesn't know how he got to his knees, but he did. And he said, "No, I'm not going to die. I'm going to fight. I'm going to do everything I can to survive." And he gets up to his knees, gets up to his feet, mind you, with three gunshots. The shot in his arm is probably fatal in itself because it hit an artery. The gunshot wound to his chest, like I said, left a 4-inch hole in his chest, and the gunshot to his head. He stumbles through the backyard of this house, what was supposedly his cousin's house, knocks over a fence, and falls down in the front driveway of this house. Given everything he could just to make it that 25 yards or so. And miraculously, there was a parole officer that happened to be driving by and saw him come out of the bushes. If you can imagine this, you're driving your car and you see this bloody zombie looking come out of the bushes in a very sketchy part of the neighborhood. But this parole officer knew that this kid was in trouble. I mean, he's covered in blood. He just happened to be there and stopped and called for help. Called 911, called the hospital, knew what to do, and runs up to Ross and says, "Hey, you're going to be okay. We're going to save you." As you can imagine, the medics show up. The police are there. And he's just clinging to life at that point. They load him onto the stretcher, and the last thing he remembers is the just kind of look on the paramedics' faces as they see this mangled mess of a teenager who's been shot multiple times with a shotgun, and he gets loaded into the ambulance, and that's the last that he remembers. What people told him later is that his heart stopped as they reached the emergency room, and he was pronounced, well, sorry, he wasn't pronounced dead, but he was assumed to be dead when they arrived at the ER. Didn't have a pulse, as you can imagine. And they could have just said, "No, you know, these injuries are too massive. We're not going to do anything. We're going to pronounce him dead at this point." But they don't. A doctor steps in and says, "No, we're going to try to revive him. We are going to do everything we can for this young man, and we're going to try to revive him." Well, they do. His heart starts again, and they get him stable. They close off the arterial bleed in his arm. They do what they can for his chest, and what should have been a fatal gunshot wound to the head, when just as his friend pulled the trigger, Ross was able to instinctively try to push the gun out of the way. Well, it shot across the top of his scalp and took off some of his scalp, a scar that he has to this day. Well, the doctor stabilized him, and he was in a coma for 3 days. Now, he doesn't have any ID on him. His parents don't know where he's at. And he wakes up after 3 days. And they're just shocked he even woke up. They thought he might be in a coma for a very long time. He wakes up and he doesn't know where he's at. He doesn't know his own name. The only thing he can remember is his dad's telephone number. And so he tells the nurses that had rushed into his room, because they don't know who he is either. They were able to get his dad's telephone number and call his father and say, "Hey, your son is here. He's clinging to life, but he's awake." And he does recover. Ross does recover. Slowly, over the next week, he gets stronger and stronger. He starts to remember things and remembers the event, and he's recovering in the hospital. And he tells his dad, "Hey, Dad, I know who did this. And him and his dad are trying to figure out, like, well, what do we do? I mean, how do we, obviously we got to talk to the police. The police have questions, that sort of thing. You know, how's this young teenager show up all shot up in the hospital? Obviously he's from a sketchy part of town, but he knows this kid. Well, the hospital gets him well enough to get transported home so he can continue to recover there. And the very next day, and mind you, we're only 4 or 5 days into it, maybe a little bit longer, men in black suits show up, and it's the FBI. And they start asking him questions about the shooting. And he says, yes, I know who shot me. It's this person. And they say, let me show you a picture. And they pull out a picture. And they say, we have this young man in custody right now. Is this the person who shot you? And he says, yes, that's him. And apparently the FBI had picked him up. The police had picked him up just a few days earlier, because after Ross's friend had tried to kill Ross and shot him, he drove home and then he called one of his friends and told him about it. And his friend said, no, you didn't. You didn't do that. And he said, yes, I did. That way I could get into the gang that they wanted me to kill a random person. And I did it. Well, his friend, this guy's friend who he told, called the police and turned him in. So they picked him up. And they're starting to piece this whole story together. And that's when the police and FBI came across Ross, and Ross possibly identified him. Well, that's not the end of the story. Now Ross needs to go to court. He needs to identify him in court, testify. And he does all that. It's pretty straightforward. And so his friend gets found guilty, and he has to go to sentencing. And Ross was there for the sentencing. The whole time his friend wouldn't look him in the eyes. This whole time his whole family was there. And his friend, instead of giving a life sentence, his judge gave his friend a break. And said that, hey, if it wasn't for Ross and what he said about you, and that we should give you a second chance, I'm only going to give you 35 years for this. His friend, being the same age as him, I get sentenced to 35 years in prison. And Ross walks away going, wow, watch out with the friends that you keep, because you never know what might happen. Right? Those lessons learned that I talked about is those red flags that start to come up in your mind, right? In certain situations, you've all felt them in certain times where it's like, well, I'm not sure about this, or I'm not sure about this person, or this person's actions are a little bit strange. You know, that intuition is so key to listen to, but we talk ourselves out of it, kind of like Ross did in this crazy story. And after I heard this, I was like, you know what? Ross gave one last good fight, not just once, but multiple times at the young age of 17. And I thought I'd share that story with all of you. If you want to look up the story, watch it on YouTube. It's pretty cool. He tells it in his own voice, and there it is. There's the Ross Capricone shooting. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you learned a few things to it and apply it to your life. See you.